I might eat Skittles during this.
Yeah.
I have this. I have Amazon. Amazon auto delivery on for this. Every 2 months, I get a big box of sour Skittles.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like $20. Great deal.
That's awesome.
I may eat some during this.
That's all. That is. That's great.
You just hear. You just hear Ben going, "Ooh, sour."
Ladies and gentlemen, we present to you the third year of the Jabbies. Come to you live with our hosts, Jared Emmel, Ben Wayman, and Alec.
Yeah,
and of course, today's special, special guest, former SNL comedian Colin Quinn.
The one and only. No one else is named Colin Quinn.
Colin, can I say that was by far the best intro we've had from our guests in this series.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, did you do radio in a past life?
You know what? I might have had some experience.
Yeah.
I've seen a radio station before.
Ah, makes sense. I can tell. I can tell. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Tui, just, not good. Not good. Not good at talking. Not good at talking. But yes, welcome, everybody. This is the final episode. We usually start with movies, and now we're ending with it.
I know
how the cookie crumbled, but I'm not mad at it. Ben was just talking. We have a lot of crossover in our lists, so we should have a lot to talk about this episode.
I might get a winner this time.
Yeah, it'll be exciting.
Got my hopes up.
So I will kick it off. Up at my number one spot. No one else had this. Makes me a little sad. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. This is technically an animated film. It's mostly live action. The main character itself, Marcel the Shell, is stop motion. Maybe a little bit of actual animation too as well. It was based on a web series created by Dean Fleischer Camp. Yep, Dean Fleischer Camp and Jenny Slate. I want to say 10 years ago now on YouTube. They're just a couple little shorts. Marcel the Shell is a little shell with one googly eye and some feet, and he gets into all types of mundane adventures that a little shell could, living inside a human home. It's a really great story. They took a really simple concept from those YouTube shorts and made it added a story to it. Marcel is trying to find the rest of his shell family. They were all taken away from him. He's trying to figure out where they went. He lives with his aunt. I think it's aunt. No, grandmother. It's Nana Connie, his old grandmother. And they're living in this, what is it called? Like an Airbnb type thing, and some guy, a filmmaker, is staying there for a couple days, and he meets Marcel, and they end up creating a friendship, and the filmmaker is trying to help Marcel find the rest of his family, and it goes viral. But it's a really heartfelt story about like family and finding yourself, all types of things like that. I really enjoyed it. It's an A24 venture. A lot of people thought it was really weird, so they probably didn't check it out. But if you haven't already, I would. I really, really loved it. Down at the bottom of my list is The Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild. This is the first spinoff in the Ice Age franchise. I think it's the first property created under Disney. They bought out Blue Sky Studios. Well, they bought out Fox. Blue Sky Studios was under the Fox name. They absorbed it, essentially. Blue Sky no longer exists. Disney now owns Ice Age as a franchise. And what did they do with it? They created the worst spinoff I think I've ever seen in my life. It follows Buck Wild, who's like the muskrat looking guy with the eye patch. He was voiced by Simon Pegg in the original movies. He's barely in it. It follows the two possum guys who are not voiced by their original voice actors. I know the one was Josh Peck. I don't remember the other. They're replaced by two other guys. Simon Pegg does return as Buck Wild. But like I said, he's barely in it. And I know it's geared towards kids. Like, it was very much just like a kid's movie. Like, look at these, ancient creatures. Look at these dinosaurs, stuff like that. But it was just soulless. It was a soulless cash grab. Made me upset. And that's saying something, because the last Ice Age movie, they went to space. Scrat was in space. So, yeah, pretty rough. Award number one. Speaking of animated films, this comes into my number four spot in my top 10. The best animated film goes to Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Colin, I know you've seen this, so you can chime in as well. This really blew me away. I was excited for it. I've always been a fan of the character, and I really liked the first movie. Humpty Dumpty being the villain, voiced by Zach Galifianakis. I mean, what's not to love there? But best animated film, Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. The villain in this, I can't even talk about it without spoiling a big chunk of the movie. It's just fantastic. One of the best villains I've seen in an animated film probably since Kung Fu Panda 2 with Gary Oldman's Shen. I think it's Shen. Yeah, and the story with Puss in Boots and the supporting characters were amazing. The animation, they used a couple different styles. There were times where they used a like a watercolor look. They had, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like a low frame rate type style to kind of make it look more like it was drawn. And you're like flipping through pages.
Especially in like the action scenes, I think they noticeably slowed it down.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what the name for that is? I did zero research, so I don't know like what that would be considered.
I think it's just called the change of the frame rate.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's a technical term.
Yeah, so it's got like a reduced frame rate, and it looks like they're doing almost stop motion, or you know, when you take a pack of sticky notes, you draw a cartoon, you change something a little bit here and there, and you flip through it. That's kind of what it looks like. But yeah, I had such a great time here. Everybody I went with, they like couldn't believe how good it was. Colin, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's I watched the first one. Actually, I had never really saw the first one until like the day before I saw The Last Wish. I thought the first one was okay. You know, just nothing too memorable. I did like Humpty Dumpty. That was a funny villain. But the movie I wasn't too blown away with. But possibly it was The Last Wish. I actually really did like. It's one of my favorite anime movies this year. It is funny because when I saw it in theaters, the two seats next to me, there were four people sitting in them, and they came in late. I just remember they were really loud and annoying, but it was kind of funny because they were only loud because they were so into the movie they were watching. Like they were like actually cheering and laughing at all the jokes. So it's one of those things where, you know, I've heard rumors of like Shrek 5 for a while now. Right. I never was really too on board with that because I didn't really like a third one. Shrek 4 I thought was okay. But after seeing Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, if those people are in charge of Shrek 5, I'm very confident in that.
Yeah, yeah. I had the same reaction. I think because they got absorbed by Illumination, maybe or maybe not, for Shrek 5. Those are the Despicable Me people. So I was like, ugh.
Well, I think they're both owned by NBC Universal, so
yeah, they're right.
Under in charge of the same guy.
Yeah, yep. So yeah, that it definitely changed my mind after seeing Puss in Boots. What else was I gonna talk? Oh, that's number six on your list, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Award number two. This is a movie that I think is on two of our lists as well. Yep, it's number eight on Colin's list. It's number nine on mine. It's The Batman, and it wins Best Original Theme. It's such a simple theme, but I think that's what makes it so great. It really hyped me up in the trailers. It's just, it's Hans Zimmer, I believe, the composer. It's just a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's so simple, you know, that's all it is. It's just played on loop, but it's amazing. I think they played it first in the movie after the car chase with the Penguin, and looking at Batman walking up to him with the fire in the background. I believe he's upside down from Penguin's perspective. It was just so fucking badass. I love it. Yeah, Hans Zimmer. Yeah, I'm not miscrediting that, right?
No, I thought it was Michael Giancarlo.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer did the Christopher Nolan Batman and the Zack Snyder Batman.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So Michael, how do you say his last name? I never knew how to say it.
Giancarlo, I believe.
G-I-A-C-C-H-I-N-O.
Giacchino.
Giacchino.
Woo!
Michael Giacchino.
Michael Giacchino.
Congratulations. Where at? All right. Award number three. best documentary. Alec tried to steal this from me. But then he switched it last minute, so I was able to give this out. Best documentary goes to Tony Hawk, Until the Wheels Fall Off. I'm a huge Tony Hawk fan, so this is definitely biased. But I learned a lot about Tony that I didn't know. We get to see a lot of the rise and fall of his career. And it really focuses on the determination and will that you need to be a skateboarder. Because even the most... The simplest tricks required so much failure to master. Majority of that sport involves failing at what you're doing, right? Not landing the kickflip, not getting the ollie, whatever. To follow a pro skateboarder, probably, I don't want to say the best, but definitely the biggest skateboarder in history, just to see the trials and tribulations that he went through to become who he is. It was just really, really crazy to watch. They centered around the 540 McTwist at the X Games, doing the inverted loop, which looked so painful. He broke some ribs doing that, because he would fall off midway, land on the ramp, just smash. And it took so many tries, and he's like screaming his head off. But then when he lands it, just the reaction from his friends and the crew watching and recording, and his just absolute euphoria after he realizes he did it. It's something special to watch. yeah, just really cool. Good for him.
Are you crying right now?
No.
That's why you're not on video.
Yeah. I just get really passionate,
We all do. Yeah, all do, man. It's Tony Hawk.
I really want to check that out. I haven't seen it. Where is it at?
HBO.
HBO. All right. Yep. Yeah.
Cause yeah, it's really cool.
I never got into skateboarding, but I know who Tony Hawk is. And I feel everyone knows who Tony Hawk is, whether or not you know skateboarding or not.
Exactly. He's so big. I was always interested in skateboarding, never tried it. And then I got to a point in life where I was like, man, I should start skateboarding. And then I realized I'm way too old to try that. So here I am watching documentaries about it.
Close enough.
But close enough. Alec, I will give it to you. You have the floor.
All righty, here we go. My number one movie of 2022 was, by a narrow margin, Top Gun Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very narrow margin. It was very close. My number two was Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery. They both were just very, very good movies. I had a great time watching both of them. I find myself during some movies that I'm definitely not tied into, like grabbing my phone, because I don't like go to the theater to watch like you professional critics do. But I just watch streaming stuff and stuff on TV. So I feel like if I'm able to get through a full movie, no matter the length, and just not touch my phone, I feel like it's a good movie. And it really did a good job of pulling me in. But Top Gun Maverick, I think because I really liked the first Top Gun, I think they did an exceptional job continuing the story of Maverick. But I honestly think that they did a great job of making this movie stand on its own and not lean super hard. I mean, obviously there are the connections of Rooster being Goose's son and Maverick struggling and stuff like that. Like, there's obvious connections, but I really don't think you need to know like minute by minute what happened in Top Gun to understand this movie.
Yeah, and I agree.
And I think Top Gun Maverick does a great job of being a sequel, being an obvious sequel, yet a successful standalone movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it does a great job. And Knives Out was the same way. It like really held on to my attention the entire movie. But I like mystery stuff like that. So moving on to my worst movie, it was Black Adam.
Damn.
Yeah, I did not like it. It felt boring. It felt fake. And I think for the DC filmmaking universe, I think Black Adam was a step backwards. They've had so much success with, even though I didn't really enjoy Joker, I thought it was a good movie. I know Ben loves it. But the Batman movies, I think the Joker films, I think they just have so much success with those that for that to then be in the same universe and connected to Black Adam, I think really holds it back. I really did not like it. It fell flat. I didn't like the characters. I feel like they tried to make Marvel style jokes with that throughout the entire movie. I'm not too ingrained in DC universe culture, but I just thought the name, the Justice Society, was horrible. Because they have the Justice League. Like, this, just like creating a spin-off of your own thing. Like, it really sucked.
And that is something.
Not a fan.
That is something from the comics that's been around for a while, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Like, a lot of this stuff has been just around. Like, the comic stuff, that's where all of these movies really come from. Like, I honestly think it's very hard today to spoil a superhero movie because odds are a comic came out a long time ago that tells you the ending to that movie.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Or several comics. But I don't know. I did not like this movie. I don't read the comics, so this is my first exposure to the Justice Society. I've always known DC as the Justice League, and I thought that was like their Avengers. And then the Justice Society is like the homies who couldn't get in. Like, I don't know. It felt it felt so fake. I don't know what it was about the whole movie, but everything they did, it felt like, oh, I already saw that in Marvel, or oh, I already saw that in a different DC movie. It didn't feel like an original piece. It felt like they just brought in scenes from other movies that could work together, changed the setting and the character names, and said, all right, do that.
Yeah.
So the movie did not change the hierarchy of movie rankings for you?
No.
Not at all.
Dude, I just thought of another award I should have given out. That for worst child character ever.
Yeah, that kid
in that movie, like, I think I wrote it in like my Letterboxd review. I was really just rooting for the villain at a certain point because I just wanted the kid to die.
Oh my
God.
Kid was annoying. And I think that kid was like, he was the aim of like, all right, let's get the comic relief that Marvel has, but we're going to put it all into this one little kid character.
Yeah, he was so cheesy. Not a fan.
I'm like, this sucks. I'm like, just tell the kid to stop talking. We'll be fine.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah, anyway.
It's just a clarify. So for Black Adam, it's funny because I am a bit of a comic nerd, if you know, you guys can tell it all. But it was funny because they were obviously expecting Black Adam to be such a huge hit, such a big part of the DC universe. In the comics, they just had this major event, and Black Adam was such an important like character in it. And it was just, you know, a lot of times comics do that now. They just kind of do what the movies do. But it's just so funny to see them do that and just know they're probably not going to follow up on it since the Black Adam movie isn't going to go anywhere in the future.
Yeah, I don't think James Gunn said it's not in his immediate plans for the DCEU and that, or the DCU now. And I think his plans span like 10 years.
I don't know. It just, it fell real flat. Did not understand it. And I think the whole like twist at the end where he, the bad guy like had to die or whatever. I'm like, how does somebody who is so entrenched in the history of this thing overlook that one little detail? That felt a little weird to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on to my awards. Best sports-themed movie I'm giving to Hustle. I liked this movie a lot. I don't know. I don't like basketball that much. But
dude, there's a basketball on the hat you're wearing right now.
No, it's not.
Dumbass.
Oh, man. Is that not a basketball?
No.
Let me make you full screen. Look, continue.
Look the, does my hat look familiar?
Okay. From what it looks like a basketball, okay? Keep going.
My cat's doing bath time behind me right now. I don't know if he's
here. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm aware.
Nice.
I'm going to leave her in.
Hustle fell at actually number 3 on my favorite movies of the year. I thought it was a great, great movie. I don't think they make a lot of sports movies, like fictional sports movies like that, that are about getting there, that aren't super like, woo, go team anymore. Like those, like the Disney sports movies.
Yeah.
I like them, but they are, it's the same like pattern over and over again. I think this one, it was very unique and different, and I liked it a lot. And Adam Sandler, I think, crushed it. I cannot remember the name of the actor who plays the basketball player, but he also did a great job.
He's an actual player.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
Yeah, keep talking. I'll look it up.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, producer Jared.
Oof.
Yeah, good luck saying his name.
Juancho Hernan Gomez.
I think that's right. But yeah, he did a great job, especially like expressing the struggles of trying to make it to the professionals, to the professional level, and showing that it's really just not easy. You can have the God-given ability to get there, but you still have to put in extreme amounts of work. It's not like, and I that's one of the main reasons I liked it. It doesn't give that Disney, oh, this kid is just good. Ta-da, he's a pro. Yeah. Like this one, I think, showed a more realistic view of the effort you have to put forth to get to that next level. My second award is Best Stand-Up Special, going out to Taylor Tomlinson for Look At You. This is very funny. It's on Netflix. She does a great job of telling jokes about real life situations that she has been in herself. She talks a lot about mental health, depression, taking medication for her mental illnesses. She goes really into a lot of things that are very difficult to talk about and very challenging for a lot of people in our world today. And she's able to make light of them and not make fun of them, if that makes sense. Like, all of her jokes really show a more positive side of this unfortunate situation that there are so many people in our country and around the world. And it doesn't sound anything like she's trying to make a joke about them, if that makes sense.
Right.
The entire special is great. And if you like stand-up comedians, I think she's going to fall into one of your top actively touring comedians out there right now. She's great. But moving on to award number 3, I have Best Inaccurate Biopic. Weird, the Al Yankovic Story.
And what is inaccurate about it, Alec? Tell us.
What is inaccurate? For starters, this is going to be a big spoiler alert. I will put in the timestamps when this starts, when it ends, in the description if you want to check it out. It's on Roku TV. Like, it's not on like a major streaming platform. Like, you can't watch it unless you have a Roku. But at the end of the movie, Weird Al is accepting an award and Madonna has him assassinated on stage from the front row with a heavy sniper rifle. Wow. That's how the movie ends.
Wait, are you saying that didn't actually happen?
No.
What?
I know, right? Weird. Yeah. Also, in the movie, Madonna and Weird Al are dating and they go to what's his name? Who's the narcos guy? What's
El
name?
Chapo.
Yes. No, is that Pablo?
Oh, Pablo. Or Pablo. I don't know.
Whatever. That's the wrong guy. Either way, that guy wanted Weird Al to perform at his birthday. So we called him. Weird Al said no. So Pablo Escobar, I think is his name, he kidnapped Madonna to get Weird Al to come save him. save her. Weird Al saves her and kills Pablo Escobar. And then Madonna decides.
It was my understanding that that's how that happened. Having seen Narcos, they actually did attribute the killing of Pablo Escobar to Weird Al.
Yeah, and then Madonna takes over the drug ring of all the drugs. She takes over and starts running it as her own. Also, did you know that Michael Jackson's Beat It is actually a parody of Eat It by Weird Al?
Yeah.
And it ruined Weird Al's career.
Yeah, that blew my mind when I saw that.
I know.
I was like, what?
Crazy. But no, if somebody would have said there's a Weird Al biopic out there, I'm not going to lie, this is exactly what I would have pictured. I would have thought something along these lines. He's going to throw in these weird ass twists that make no sense, just like all of his songs, and it's going to be funny and it's going to work. And it did for me. This actually fell at number 5 on my list. It was so funny. I thought it was great. But those are all of my awards. I think these are great movies, and I definitely recommend you checking out all of these three movies. Does a stand-up special really count as a movie?
I've always considered it more like a TV special, but that's like weird. It's like a one-off thing, so in that way it's like a movie. It's weird. It's like a middle ground area. I can see it being both.
And like documentaries, I think, are similar. Like, they are movies, but they could also not be movies.
Right, yeah.
Weird, but anyway, yeah, check out Taylor, check out Weird Al. If you have a Roku TV, you can watch it.
Actually, you can download the Roku channel on
anything. Can just get the channel.
Yeah, yep.
Word.
Yeah, because that's what we did.
It's great. Check all these movies out. Benjamin,
cool. Yeah,
tell me a little bit about your movies.
I don't think my list had like a ton of crossover, maybe down towards like the bottom half. Yeah, some good movies this year. This is probably I probably saw the most movies I've ever seen from that year, last year. Every time we try to do this, I barely scratch like 10 movies from like that year, but I saw a bunch of new releases this year. So my favorite movie of the year was The Northman. Admittedly, the first time I saw it, I wasn't particularly blown away. Then I saw it again. Things kind of made more sense. Fantastic movie. I love Robert Eggers. I'm really excited for his Nosferatu movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
But I like that this was kind of – it had all the, like, earmarkings and characteristics of, like a Viking revenge, like, saga. But it was just weird enough that it was like, oh, right, I'm watching a Robert Eggers movie. So definitely one of my favorites. It does also win an award, so I guess I'll start here. It won the best gross death, of which there were many, especially on my list. Later in the movie, after the kind of like insurrection begins, Alexander Skarsgård, what was his character's name? My favorite
Hamlet.
Movie, I can't even.
Hamlet, yes. Yeah.
Is that because it's Hamlet? The movie's based on Hamlet, so you just swap the letters. Yeah, yep.
Dude, can't believe I didn't
that blow your mind? Yeah.
Yeah, that makes the movie like is now recontextualized for me now that I know that.
Pretty cool.
There's a scene where earlier in the movie, Alexander Skarsgård's character cuts someone's nose off. And then later in the movie, that same person shows up again, and Alexander Skarsgård kind of finishes the job by shoving his sword into his like vacated nose hole, just all the way through. Yeah, really cool, really gross. There were some grosser ones in some of these other movies. One of the movies on my list was Crimes of the Future, David Cronenberg's latest movie. Very socially conscious, very kind of like a cautionary tale, very gross. It was disgusting, but a great movie. I loved it a lot. I had a couple of anime movies on here. Jujutsu Kaisen Zero was second. Thought it was fantastic. A real triumph for the medium. I also had Dragon Ball Super Superhero on here, which I saw a couple months ago. Dragon Ball makes me feel like a kid, which is like the only property that can make me feel that way. So love that one a lot. A couple others on here. I had Bullet Train at number 7. I thought that one was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I had the Batman at 3. Real breath of fresh air and kind of an oversaturated superhero movie genre era, whatever you want to call it. My only complaint was that it was only PG-13. I feel like it kind of lent itself to being rated more maturely. It was a pretty dark movie thematically, and it kind of turned campy towards the end. But yeah, my awards. The Batman won one. Best fat suit goes to Colin Farrell for he was the Penguin. Brendan Fraser was also up for his fat suit in The Whale. What set it apart for me, though, was that you couldn't even recognize Colin Farrell in The Batman. But in The Whale, you could go, oh, that's just Brendan Fraser. Speaking of The Whale, I forgot to talk about my least favorite movies. The Whale is not my least favorite movie, so I don't know why I use that as a segue. I wouldn't say I had a least favorite movie. I would say that there were a few disappointing ones. I thought The Whale was pretty disappointing. I don't think it was a particularly great movie. It seems like people kind of got lost in the hype of, oh, Brendan Fraser is back.
Yeah.
Which he was fantastic. No, that's not a knock against him. I thought Nope was also incredibly disappointing.
Yep, with you there.
And honestly, this is not me being dramatic, even though I like to provoke. I genuinely think it's probably one of the worst movies I've seen like in the last 5 years easily. Yeah, I can talk about that all day, but
you think Nope is one of the worst?
Yeah, Nope was terrible.
Wow. Yeah.
I really didn't like it. So my last award, if we're talking about like subpar horror movies, best female lead in a subpar horror movie, of which again, there were many this year. Jessie Buckley for Men. I like Jessie Buckley a lot. I thought she was great in this movie. I was really hyped for Men and it ended up not being good like at all, but I thought she was good in it. Other nominees for this category were the lead from Smile. I forget what her name was.
It's Kevin Bacon's daughter, which I just learned the other day.
Interesting. Yeah, there were a few. There were many horror movies that came out this past year.
Lucy Bacon.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, good year for movies. 2023 is looking better. So I've already seen some great stuff. Can't wait to talk about that in like 9 months' time. But
sir. Yeah.
All right, Colin. I'm really excited to hear what you have to talk about.
All right, yeah. So it's funny when you mentioned like seeing the most movies this past year, because that was the same thing for me. I set a goal early in the year to see 50 movies released in 2022 in 2022, and I did it. Granted, I was watching my 50th movie on New Year's Eve in the afternoon. I wasn't like I skipped the fireworks or anything, but I just made it, and I've seen a few more since then. But yeah, so I've seen a lot that came out this past year, and yeah, I think it was actually a great year because there was a lot of good stuff. Honestly, trying to like narrow down like only 10 movies to be my favorite is pretty tough.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty happy with my list. My number one pick, which I think was on a couple, one or two lists, but has been on a lot of other lists everywhere else, and it's gotten a lot of awards, is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it twice now, twice in theaters, saw it once with some of these co-hosts. I saw it again with my mom, because I bet you my mom wants to see like awards movies sometimes, I thought she might be able to relate to this movie since the lead is a middle-aged woman who has no idea what the hell's going on. So yeah, I did see it twice, and I've loved it both times. I just think it's it's really just a unique movie. Granted, it wasn't the only multiverse movie that came out this year, but I would dare say it's the best one. Mm-hmm. The action scenes were obviously really cool. All the fight choreography was really well done. All around, just a great cast. You know, Michelle Yeoh, big comeback for Ki-Hui Kwan. He's gotten a lot of awards for it. And then I didn't even know Jamie Lee Curtis was in it, but she was also very entertaining. Stephanie Zhu. So, I mean, all around, great cast, cool, great action. It was funny, but it was also very earnest, sincere. So it's just stayed with me ever since I've seen it. And yeah, it's easily been my number one, uncontested, even though there were a lot of other good things. But speaking of action movies, another great one I saw this year was RRR, which was an Indian film that was released on Netflix. That, again, very entertaining. It was, I didn't really know a lot about it, but it was about, it's a fictional movie about two real-life Indian revolutionaries, and there's this like undocumented period in both their lives around the same period. And so the writer, director of the movie decided, what if they met each other and became best friends during that time, even though there's no records of them actually ever meeting each other. But it's a Bollywood movie, so it has that like really over the top action, but it's awesome. You know, you get the guy like being chased by like a tiger and then fighting like a jaguar or something. You got the thing where a guy just lets loose a bunch of animals while fighting British soldiers. I mean, you know, the action is just so over the top. Oh, the part where a guy like throws a spear at a motorcycle, it flies in the air, he grabs and just throws it at someone else. So just a lot of just crazy stuff like that. And
it's really long, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like three and a half hours. So I ended up watching like Sigma. I'd watch like an hour and a half, something like that. But yeah, great movie. There's a whole song and dance number because, you know, it's a Bollywood movie. The song Natu Natu, which I believe is actually out for an Oscar for best song. So yeah, I love that one too. And then another movie I want to highlight, you know, Ben, you were just talking about subpar horror movies, but I want to highlight what I think was a really good horror movie this year. And that was Barbarian by Zach Cregger, one of the whitest kids you know. It was actually really bizarre because I was looking, this is like the first movie that he's written, directed in like over a decade.
Wait, say that again?
It's like the first movie he's written, directed in like over a decade.
No, like, is this actually from one of the guys from Whitest Kids You Know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah, Zach Cregger. Yeah. I'm just curious.
I'm at a loss for words. That guy? Sorry, yeah. Keep going. This is crazy.
But, yeah, I mean, I was so surprised when I found out about that, but... I have noticed a lot of guys who've worked in comedy have been crossing over to horror, it seems like, the past few years. I mean, obviously, like Jordan Peele, he's like the big name in horror right now. Danny McBride co-wrote the most recent Halloween movies. Zach Cregger, obviously, now. But yeah, Barbarian was really good. I just remember watching it at my house, and it's been a while since I've really seen a horror movie that really had me on the edge of my seat. I went into Barbarian pretty much blind, and those first 20, 30 minutes are just so intense. I had no idea what's going to happen. And, you know, Justin Long is in it too. He's really good, Bill Skarsgård. But, I mean, yeah, it was like just really weird, creepy, and just, you know, I haven't seen a horror movie quite like it. I will say by the end of it, the last like 20 minutes or so, it starts to lean more into like the kind of tropey horror stuff, you know, the big monster chasing in. But overall, though, I really, really liked it. And, I mean, there have been a number of horror movies. I thought there were plenty of good ones, plenty of bad ones. But this, I think, was easily my favorite horror movie this year. Now, speaking of bad horror movies, the worst one I saw this year might be one of the worst movies, probably my least favorite movie of last year, is 2022's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is just called Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So this is I believe it's the ninth Texas Chainsaw movie that they've made. Now, the original one, I love. It's my favorite horror movie. One of my favorite movies ever, because it's kind of like with Barbarian. It's just such a creepy, weird, and intense movie. And I've only seen a couple of sequels. I saw the first three. Second one is campy, goofy, but kind of just entertaining, just how weird it is. Third one's awful. I hate it. And this one, I was kind of interested to see where they're going with it, but it was already looking bad from the start because after 2 weeks of filming, they just fired the original directors and just were scrapped everything that they filmed. So it was already kind of a bad sign. And so they got a new director. Then I heard news that the test screenings went really bad. And so, and then they skipped the theatrical release, decided to just go straight to Netflix. So this movie had everything going against it. And yeah, I'd say it was bad. It's kind of weird because I wasn't sure. There were times where I almost felt like it was trying to, it was like a parody, like it was trying to be like a satire of like horror movies, but also it takes itself just seriously enough. Like it's weird. Like, I mean, I don't know how familiar you guys are with it, but there's a line in the movie. 'Cause the whole plot of it is a bunch of these like social media influencers or whatever go to this Texas town to like gentrify or whatever. And there's a point where they're all in the party bus and Leatherface comes on wearing his, the face mask, holding a chainsaw. They all just pull their phones out and someone goes, "Try anything, you're canceled, bro." Genuine line of dialogue in the movie. And then one of the main characters, she's a school shooting survivor. No reason for that. Just because the only reason they have that's because she's scared of guns. Until relatable. She's not at the end, yeah. But I don't know. It was just such a so many bizarre ideas. And then the main characters kind of kill an innocent person. So they're also very hard to sympathize with. So I don't know. It's just a really bad movie all around. You know, I've heard some people like kind of defend, like, oh, it's just supposed to be the dumb, fun horror movie. But for me, it was just dumb. Not really any fun at all. There was maybe like a 5-10 minute scene that was kind of entertaining, but for the most part, I was not impressed with it. Now, that actually brings us to our first award, because there actually was a good Texas Chainsaw movie that came out this past year, and it was not Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
What?
It was the movie X.
Yeah.
So, I saw X not too long, probably last month or so, and I didn't know a lot about it, but I heard a lot of people compare it to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I kind of see why. It takes place in the 70s, takes place at the old farmhouse. Now, they did not... The people in the original movie were not trying to film a porno, but, maybe we've got to do something different. But I did like X a lot. It had good cast. Jenna Ortega was in it, Mia Goth. And Mia Goth kind of plays two roles. She plays her main character, and then she plays the villain who's under all this old woman makeup, which is actually really impressive. I already knew it was her going into it, but I wouldn't have probably if I wasn't told beforehand. But yeah, so... I didn't love the movie, but I did think it was pretty overall very solid horror movie and kind of captures that original Texas Chainsaw energy more than an actual Texas Chainsaw movie, which I thought was ironic. And then moving on. Oh, and actually the reason I brought up our brand is because I did award that the best horror movie of 2022. So my third and final award is best product placement. And this is going to the huge hit Spirit Halloween, the movie. So there actually was a Spirit Halloween movie that came out, and I saw it. So I just saw somewhere online, Spirit Halloween just shared a post like, oh, hey, like our movie's coming out. Or no, I heard about the movie a while ago. I'm like, oh, wow, that's weird. And then they actually got a theatrical release.
It has Christopher Lloyd in it.
Yeah, he's the villain. So I saw that it got like a limited theater release. It only was screened at 2 theaters in all of Pennsylvania. And so I asked my friends, like, hey guys, do you want to see Spirit Halloween the movie? And of course they did, because who wouldn't? And so it was kind of funny. We bought our tickets for a showing. It was just us and then like I think 2-3 other people in the theater, in that whole theater. And we're driving there. It's like a 6:15 showing or something, but and it's about 40 minutes away, so we leave around 5-ish or so. But, we get stuck in traffic and, the movie is not even 90 minutes and we were just got to the theater. It was like 6:30, 6:45. We're still driving there. We're still got some ways to go. And so my friends and I were talking like, all right, We can either come in and watch like the last 30 minutes of this movie, or we can just take the loss, buy tickets for the 8 o'clock showing, and see it in its entirety, which ended up being the best decision we made because we were the only people at that showing. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen a movie where you're the only ones in the theater, but it is a glorious experience because we could just openly laugh and just talk during the movie. And there's a lot of, like Christopher Lloyd's in it, and you can clearly tell he does not really care. He just kind of, I could barely understand what he was saying in most of the movie. And it's just, it's so bizarre. It was filmed at a real Spirit Halloween, and Spirit Halloweens are always, you know, take up the corpse of an old abandoned department store. This was clearly a former Toys R Us, and it's just, it's such a ridiculous movie. It's just, it's a very predictable, you know, one note characters, but it's so bizarrely made. Like, it was just so amateurish in a lot of ways. There were literally just shots where it would be like the character, he has like a Dracula costume, he's got his cape on, it's all in one shot, and it's like over his shoulder, and then it just cuts and it's literally just hanging off in the next shot. Just like continuity is just like that. Or characters have these, like, there's like the one kid's a nerd, he wears like a periodic table t-shirt, so then he realizes, oh, he can make a flamethrower with like hairspray and a lighter later in the movie. Or then see where he's like a,
only a nerd could figure that out.
Yeah. Or there's another scene where he's at someone's house, the one girl's house, and she has like these gymnastic photos hanging on the fridge. And there's a single scene where she uses gymnastics, like kick over a haunted animatronic at Spirit Halloween or something.
Wow, man.
But yeah, it was. Oh, and the main guy does not get the girl.
What?
It was so, like, you know, she gets possessed by Christopher Lloyd. Then they, you know, banish him or whatever. And, you know, she wakes up, asks what happened, and, you know, the kid goes, oh, like, you're all right now. And he goes in to kiss her, and she goes, whoa, hey. I appreciate what you did, but that's not happening.
That's funny.
Damn.
That's legitimately funny.
Yeah, oh, man, we lost that scene. And there actually, there's one of the funniest parts of the whole movie. So the main kid, his mom, like, his dad died, and so his mom remarries. He has a stepfather and this, like, little stepsister that he doesn't really get along with.
That's hilarious.
In his room, and his stepsister is like, you know, she's like 5 years old, and like comes in the room asking for help with something. He's like, oh, whatever. And then out of nowhere, she goes, I'm sorry, your dad died of blood cancer.
Oh, God.
That's not funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it was, I mean, maybe from like a technical standpoint, it really was the worst movie I saw in 2022, but it was also one of the best movies I saw in 2022, because that experience, you know, I wish that was a movie that they should have Christopher Lloyd before the movie started. Goes, thank you for seeing this in theaters the way it was meant to be.
Right, yeah.
Because that's a movie that,
wow,
seeing in theaters, that was the best way to do it. No regrets. And, you know, my friends and I, you know, we ended up buying our tickets twice because we missed one showing. So we probably contributed to about half that movie's box office gross. So,
yeah, oh, I'm curious. I'm gonna look at it.
There's there's something special about a movie that knows that it's bad and kind of leans into it a little bit. Yeah.
That's
100%.
That's one thing I will say about going to school for like what we all went to for like media and stuff like that, and then doing this show with Ben and Jared, talking to Colin almost every day, every other day at the least. I can't watch movies the same anymore. Like, I cannot just sit down and enjoy a dang movie. I notice all the continuity errors, the editing things, like, oh, like the cup was full in that shot, but then you cut back 2 seconds later and his next line, the cup's empty. I'm like, okay, clearly
unwatchable.
It's a different line. And I'm like, these little details that people who went to school for accounting don't notice, I notice now, and it's hard. It stresses me out a little bit.
Like, I struggle with that for a while, being like trying to balance being critical and like actually just enjoying the movie for what it is. And I think over time it just kind of balanced itself out. So now, like, I'll still notice things. I'm like, this like whatever, the continuity or like bad thematic connection or whatever, but just like enjoying the movie as like a sum of its parts, I think just gets easier like with time.
Yeah. Or like body language, stuff like that, I noticed too. Mm-hmm. And like my parents and my sister, who's in school for culinary arts, they do not watch movies with me anymore. They're like, I can't do this with you because you notice the dumb stuff that, and it's insignificant stuff. Like just like somebody's arms will be crossed like this and then they'll cut away and then they return for a second line and our arms are crossed the other way. I'm like, why does that matter? It doesn't, but it's some stuff I notice and it just is like, it's almost like a younger sibling, like just tapping your arm. Like
this is going to sound like really pretentious, but like, I feel like noticing stuff like that and being able to like articulate your feelings about why you like or dislike a movie or show or whatever, it almost makes your opinion like more valuable. Like that sounds bad because like everyone's opinion is like valid. But when I talk with my friends about movies, they're just like, yep, saw Ant-Man, whatever. Like I thought it was great. Loved the like emotional journey. Thought it was like amazing. And then like they have their position and like I can articulate like why I think that movie is like horse shit. But like I don't know. It just gives you like a leg to stand on basically.
Or you can like, you can tell the difference between people who like actually study film or actually like kind of know the what to talk about and who just be like using buzzwords for like YouTube reviews they've watched.
Oh yeah, exactly. God. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But let's move on to our award for Jabby of the Year. Jared, yes. Did you have to do any recalculations this time?
No, but I did have to do a lot of calculations because we did have a lot of crossover. I think there's at least 10 films here that are on at least two of our lists. So there's a lot of double checking, but I'm pretty sure I narrowed it down. Alec, you will be getting double representation here. I know you've been whining about that and you're finally getting you're getting it. He's punching the air right now.
I'm pumped that I actually got some content to win the best thing ever.
So your top one and two are the honorable mention and the winner. Your number one is the honorable mention, Top Gun Maverick with 19 points. And that's all from you and I. I gave it 9 points, you gave it 10. It was my number two for the year, and it was obviously your favorite, giving it 19. But the winner edging out by 2 points with 21. It was on just two of our lists as well. Also you and I, Alec, it was number three on my list, number two on yours. Giving us 21 points. Wait, no. And then it was also on Colin's list at number seven. That's what edges it out. Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, 21 points. That is our winner, our film of the year at the Jabbies.
Woo! I'm not mad about it.
Congratulations.
Solid choice.
It was a great movie. I think Glass Onion, Knives Out was awesome. And it definitely it wasn't connected to the original Knives Out movie, which I thought was really cool. Other than Benoit Blanc, there really was no major connection from one to the next. And I feel like that lends itself to almost like a nice movie franchise of just Benoit Blanc solving a number of different mysteries, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a great film, and I think they probably could have left out the A Knives Out Mystery.
Yeah, even
the title.
Even Rian Johnson hates that, but they had to do it for branding purposes. Netflix asked for that.
Yeah, I think he's hoping for the next sequel that they'll be able to drop it.
Well, do you think that it was really necessary?
Not at all. Yeah. Well, I think there are some people that would not have known it was a Knives Out sequel, unfortunately. The amount of critical thinking that goes on in the average person's brain when it comes to these things is pretty low. Like, they have to be told exactly what movies are a lot of times.
And even then they'll be like, so why is only Daniel Craig in it? Why isn't Chris Evans in this one?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but I think overall the movie did a great job of separating itself as a sequel, and you don't necessarily, much like Top Gun, you necessarily don't have to watch Knives Out to get this one.
Oh yeah, not at all.
I mean, if you watch Knives Out, then I think the only thing you benefit from watching Knives Out to Glass Onion is how significant of a detective Benoit Blanc actually is. I think that's the only thing you really benefit, but they always, even in this movie, they keep calling him like the greatest detective ever, like the wonderful Benoit Blanc. Like, I don't think you need to, but I think it adds to his resume as a detective.
For sure. For sure. Oh, also, I looked up the Spirit Halloween worldwide box office. $85,737.
What was the budget?
That's a good question. It doesn't say.
I'll look it up.
$10.
I think I'm sure the Spirit Halloween store turned enough profit to cover whatever they lost in the movie.
Yeah,
probably.
Also, it released in Russia first.
I think next year, if we can get a couple episodes between now and next Jabbies, we should do an award for best movie pitch. I didn't think about that till right now. Our movie pitches were pretty creative.
Yeah, they were.
I think we need to get Colin on to do a movie pitch.
Ooh.
We should. That'd be fun with guests.
You could do that.
Yeah, I think Colin could write some killer movies. Not like Ben, who like literally made killing movies. But
just don't appreciate my genius.
Yeah.
Colin, you're ahead of your time.
If you did not listen to our movie pitches, Ben had a theme of killing somebody at the end, always. And
I said before you brought this up, and I said like death is like the ultimate, like it doesn't get worse than that. You know what I mean? So.
And Daniel
playing Kaluuya. With the fragility of human life.
Daniel Kaluuya was also in every movie.
I had some funny ones.
Most people. Yeah, he did. He did.
They died in those too, but it was funnier.
It's the funny type of dying.
Yeah. And then I messed up the genre for one of Jared's.
Oh my God. Yeah. Colin, I gave him space opera as the genre and he took it literally.
Oh, you know what? I think I actually did listen to that one.
Yep. A legit opera in space.
He texted me like the day of or the day before. And he's like, Jared, what's an example of a space opera? And I was like, Star Wars. And then I just did a text back, fuck.
Oh man.
Fuck.
Yeah. Fuck. That was my reaction.
That was so funny.
It was a great movie. I put a lot of effort into that one too.
I don't even. Was it like rollerblading in space?
Yeah, it was roller skiing.
Yeah,
it was roller derby. Roller derby
in roller space. Derby in space. Yeah,
and the main character was the like galaxy's renowned roller derby player and opera singer. Yep.
Yeah, it was funny.
Classic, classic.
I'd pay to see that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was a great movie.
We got Scorsese on the phone right now.
Yeah, we do. Oh man.
Well, yeah. I think that's it, gents.
I think so too.
I think it is.
So, Glass Onion's officially the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah. Yeah. You heard it here first, folks.
Absolutely. I can stand by that.
Well, Colin, thanks for coming on again. Is this your second or third time with us on the Jabcast?
This is my second appearance.
Second, okay. So Luke's got you beat by 3, Ben Tui as well. So God, we're going to have to even that out.
All right, so I will kill Luke then.
Yeah. It's decided. Luke, if you're listening, lock your door, man.
I'm already in your house. It's too late.
Under the bed.
Oh, no.
In the walls.
All right, well, that is it for the Jabbies this year, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you are, for some reason, listening to this episode first, we've got 3 more for you. We've got video games, we've got TV, and music. Check those out. See if your favorites won. See if your least favorites are being bashed. It's a good time. We handed out some fun awards this year. Glad to mix it up. We got our guests, Colin, Luke, Ben. Great time.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Of course. Of course. Thanks for joining us. Bye, everybody.
Later, homies.
And scene.